This is French. Om Shanti. So there you go. You've just experienced your ultimate stage. Joy, happiness, lightness, love and laughter. Now, what more do you want? Is there anything else you want more? No? I mean, so I'm stepping in for Sureshtiri, and I, at first, when I got the call yesterday and this morning, I said, yeah, whatever topic she has, I'll learn from it as well. And then when I read the title, I thought, oh, this is too big for me. And the title is? Who knows the title of today's? Experiencing your ultimate stage. Now, in Hindi, the word ultimate means antim, which actually means your final stage. Right? So, ultimate means highest, final, the most complete version of yourself that can be. And it really got me thinking, well, I suppose just feeling that, you know, when a baby is born, a baby is an invocation of love, isn't it? It comes into being because it's an invocation of love. And actually, you know what? Our final form is an invocation of love. It's the baby that's pregnant inside us. Maybe some of us don't know we're pregnant. But we are. We have a deity in waiting right there. And somehow for it to come out, yes, there has to be some labor. Yeah. Mum has to experience a lot of pain, reach absolute limits of the pain threshold, and then out pops this baby. So on this whole thing, the way I like to frame it is that, you know, we're really just invoking something so beautiful, and it is an act of love. And so when I start to think about what is complete or final or ultimate inside me, I think the first place I often start with is my experiences of Baba in my childhood days. Because in Brahmin life, those references and experiences with Baba is what actually is telling us, giving us a clue as to who we are. Not Gopi and Gopi's name and form and Gopi's karmic accounts, but what have I felt when I've taken drishti from Baba? What have I felt when I've connected to Baba in a true way? And I think tracking that is very important. That's the first thing. The second thing is sometimes, you know, when I kind of came to Baba, I didn't really come to Baba. It was probably a transition from a previous life. But I remember always feeling the deity inside. But I had no connection with the angel. And it just felt so comfortable being the deity. And I couldn't understand why everybody else weren't deities. But then I realized this whole life for me in this birth is learning how to be an angel. And part of being an angel, well, is to even let go of your goodness. You know, you can be born in this life with a good nature, good sanskars, good karma. We have facilities. We still have a good life, even in our last birth. And yet good is not enough. Because what we're stepping into is something very, very real and very powerful and stable. And it's like the blueprint of your original DNA. It's when you reset yourself to an original place, you will hit this place. Now for each one, it's a different frequency. And what I mean by that is that, you know, a rose flower can only be a rose flower, right? You can't make a rose flower into a baobab tree. You know, a coconut tree will be a coconut tree. So whatever is your part and your special part and the specialness of who you are, that's what you will be. You will only be the best version of yourself. As much as we may try, you know, can't be like Daddy Jenki, can't be like Sister Jenti. But the second aspect is you can take inspiration. And I think that's key, because for many souls, and, you know, even though I had experienced the deity very easily, it was like the reference of my complete stage was fairly clear that this is what I have to be friends with and uphold. But then sometimes you don't experience that stage. Sometimes it feels far away. Sometimes you experience the reality of your old nature and sanskars. And in those moments, I think it's very important to look towards inspiration. What am I being inspired by in my Brahmin life? And why I say inspiration? Because, you know, there's one state where we get impressed with someone's virtue, someone's speciality. And when you're in a state of being impressed, you've kind of just given yourself away a little bit. And it creates a longing inside for you to be like that. But you feel helpless and you're not sure you can be like that. That's what being impressed does to you. But when you're inspired, what's the feeling inside? I can do it too. What does that mean? That means that little deity has just woken up and goes, that's me. So, very important question. I mean, I'm sharing these questions because I think we need some space in introversion. It's January to really put this form into focus for ourselves. Once it's, you know, the kaleidoscope has focused in on it, every part of your being will start to respond to it, to become it. So, first reference are my childhood days with Baba, especially there. But what have been the special moments with Baba? What's the bhavna that's awoken in me when I sit in front of Baba? The second is, what am I being inspired by in Brahmin life? Yeah, it could have been, I was very much inspired by Daddy's efforts. And I would see those efforts and I would write them down. I was very inspired by someone's dharana in a particular situation. I would see that and I would write that down. And then, the beautiful thing is, after noting your experiences and inspirations, then turn around and ask yourself this question: what is it telling me about who I am? Yeah? What is it telling me about who I am? And that's what it means to start experiencing or perceiving what is really true inside you. You have to close the circle, close the loop. Take your eyes out, but bring them straight back in again. What is this telling me about who I am? And I guess to a certain extent, you know, it may be easy sometimes to hide behind your fear, hide behind uncertainty, hide behind doubt, because it's what we know. It's a comfortable zone. And yet Baba's drishti and the drama invites us to step out of the curtain. And we're like, oh, I'm not sure I can. Right? It's better to hide under someone's skirt or hide behind somebody. Right? That's why some people prefer the proximity to power rather than stepping into power. There's a big difference. You can enjoy being near powerful people, powerful souls, and you can get a feed and a fix. But to become powerful? And this word, you know, I was playing with two words. Longing and belonging. I guess most of us have felt what longing feels like, right? When you're longing something, what does it feel like? You want it. What does the feeling of longingness feel like inside? Temptation? Expectation? What does longing feel like inside? Desire, empty. It's like a yearning. Yeah, there's like an ache. There's something missing. There's an ache for something. And then you have belonging. We just attach the B to it. B-E to it. Which is every time I practice being, I finish longing. This is in a nutshell when Baba says to us, consider yourself to be a soul and remember me. It is just at each moment practicing being, being, being. And we finish the longing. Because longing is actually a comfortable place. We've been yearning for so long, we're used to it now. So we bring that into Gyan. Maybe we sit in a gathering, we may have a powerful experience, and then the next time we sit again in the gathering, guess what we're doing? We're longing for that experience again, right? And we've forgotten that we have a method to be. Somebody once asked me yesterday, because I was on a Zoom call somewhere, and we were going through some practices. And then the soul said, oh, I was experiencing Baba's presence, but I felt this thing was getting in the way. How can I just stay in this experience all the time? I said, you can't. Right? But you can recreate it. So don't wish for the experience. Use the methodology. You just need a really good method so that you can activate that method anytime, any place, anywhere. It will generate an experience. You know, right now we have one type of experience because the time, the moment, the people, and then I let myself be. And I'm open to seeing what I receive from Baba. But next week, time, moment, different people are different. I can't expect the same experience next week. But I can use the same method. So I think sometimes in our Brahmin life, the final stage, the complete stage, feels far away because we have this expectation for this experience. And actually, that thing is already birthed inside you. It's there. It's doing its work. It's just saying, look, God has given you a method. Just follow that method and I will emerge. The deity will emerge. Because many times when I observe, you know, what's happening inside me, I really feel how intelligent this being is, the deity, you know. It can protect me without making me defensive. It can hold me in my self-respect, even in adverse situations. There's just a huge intelligence there. And the only thing is we just have to activate it. And that's when we just follow the very simple methods to be that Baba gives us. Because if we sustain this feeling of longing inside us, I mean, of course, it's an experience that is born when we fall into vice, especially the vice of lust. When, you know, you've conjoined with a person, a human being, the physical hormonal mix of things, and then you separate, it's painful. That pain and that longing, that is all a product of the vice of lust. So, as long as we keep that sanskara alive, longing keeps us subservient. It's almost like we're saying, I'm ready just to be a slave. I'm longing for whatever I'm longing for, I'm a slave to, I'm subservient to. And then the paradox with subservience is that it will create fear. Fear that someone's going to take over. Fear of authority. So it's a very, unobvious but a vicious cycle of longing, yearning, subservience, fear. And then it gets triggered in relationships. Right? Especially in relationships where you can't control the other person. Right? Oh my God, panic stations. They're going to destroy everything. Well, even if they do, so what? You know, I remember this story Daddy once told us. She was in Madhuban with Sakar Baba. And Didi Manmohini was Sakar Baba's personal assistant. So Didi would sit near Baba and Didi would take notes for everything that Baba, the Srimat that Baba gave when he met the children. And one time Baba must have sent Didi to Bombay and Daddy Janki was in Madhuban. So she thought, oh, Baba will ask me, right? You know, expectations. So Baba will ask me to come and sit next, right? Instead, Baba put a 12-year-old Kumari there. So now, of course, Daddy Janki kind of felt it a bit. What's this 12-year-old going to know about Baba Srimat? And, you know, how is she going to take notes about it? And it must have shown on Daddy's face. And I think at one point, she just kind of indicated a little bit to Sakar Baba, but, you know, Baba, how is this 12-year-old Kumari? And Baba just, you know, told her off and said, what's it to you? I'll put a 3-year-old here tomorrow. What's it to you? You know? To that extent, where we stop minding somebody else's business, even if their actions appear, and I'm going to use the word appear, to be harming something, we have no idea what their part is in this plot of the drama. You know this Harry Potter film and this, who is it, Snape? Who is Harry Potter's, the guy in black, Snape, isn't it? That's his name, I think. So he looks like he's the bad guy, always doing bad things. But actually, we find out a few, I haven't seen the Harry Potter film, but this is something, a story that I heard. We find out that a few films later, he's actually assigned to protect Harry Potter. And all of his actions are built to bring out Harry's potential. So, you know, inside our heart, nobody is an enemy. They're my best friends. They are just helping me to become extremely patient, extremely tolerant, extremely merciful, extremely loving, extremely content, and they're helping me reach my ultimate stage. It's a fact. Right? And I feel like, you know, on the journey of kind of dancing with your own power, because this stage is very powerful. Nothing can shake it. When you've come home to something so true and pure inside, nobody, it doesn't matter what anybody does, you develop a spiritual immunity. So, you know, on this journey of dancing with this power, we are building a capacity. And this is something very important to understand. You know, a few days ago, Baba in the Murali said, sometimes there are sons, you know, in Lokic families that can't wait for their father to die to get the money or to get the seat, to get the position. And if you are impatient for anything, it means you're not ready for it yet. If you're impatient to get the stage, if you're impatient for somebody to give you some role in service, if you're impatient to give a public talk, right? If you're impatient to grow up, it means you're not ready for it yet. There is a capacity. If you want to sit on a seat, a very elevated seat, which is what your ultimate stage is, it's a seat of the highest self-respect, that seat comes with sanskars. It has to be supported by sanskars. That stage is supported by certain sanskars. The sanskars of mercy, the sanskars of benevolence. And that is a capacity we have to develop. Because the only person who takes themselves off the seat is me. You know how sometimes there was a sister in London, you know, she'd come and sit in the front row, and then every time somebody came, she'd get up and move at two seats across. And then another person came, she'd get up again. One day I said to her, sister, it's okay. You can sit there. Just stay seated. And she thought, no, but maybe I have to move. I said, no, you don't have to move. Just sit. Just sit. Just concentrate. It's okay. Right? So we're a bit like that, right? Here's Baba preparing this wonderful throne. We're on his heart throne anyway, but he's probably preparing this crown for us. And he's going, excuse me, just hold still for a moment. Just hold still for a moment. And we're like, oh look, you know. And so silence plays a very important role. Sometimes when, especially on the field of service, you know, Daddy would often throw us into situations that we had no idea about. Like, you know, I didn't even know the ABC of where to start. And she would say, Baba will touch your intellect. And it was almost in that moment, the faith that she had, not in this soul, but in Baba being able to use this soul. There's a difference. Okay? You can't really trust someone's nature and samskaras because it's changing all the time. But what I used to feel is the faith she has in Baba, that Baba's going to use me. That, and I used to think, oh, I'm valuable to Baba. And that would then give me the faith to walk out onto the field and say, Baba. Because it wasn't about my capacity in that moment, but my capacity grew as I said yes to Baba. I said, Haji. And I noticed this was a really fine shift, because sometimes, you know, one of the very subtle bondages we can have on this journey to our perfection is the bondage of the dependence of our service companions or the people close to us. Right? Because they have a particular speciality, they can do something, they're good at a particular thing that you can't do. And sometimes you can feel, oh, I have to look after them because I don't want them to leave. But it is a very subtle bondage. It's a golden chain of a bondage. Because you let yourself become subservient to somebody, somebody's specialities. But in that moment, if you were to stop and think, well, actually, who gave them that speciality? And that whose task is it? If really Baba wants something to happen, let me tell you, he will make anyone an instrument to make it happen. It could be a 3-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 52-year-old, doesn't matter. But if God wants something, God will get it. So, if Baba wants something to grow, Baba will touch someone's intellect. Baba will use that soul. And I think this was one of the biggest things I learned from Daddy about trust and faith. That gyan, what is gyan? Gyan isn't just knowledge and information. The purpose of gyan is to completely come into full relationship with Baba. Is to realize, who am I and who I belong to? So if your churning of gyan is not taking you back to Baba and your bond with Baba, then there's something wrong in the way you're churning gyan. Or maybe you're mixing, you're comparing gyan with the gyan of the outside world. So, you know, deep inside, it's Baba's task. Baba is Karan Karavanhar. And I want to see how Baba is working. So you can step onto the field as a detached observer of yourself. Okay? You're not stepping on the field alone. You're with Baba, detached sati with sakshi, sakshi sati, companion with the detached observer. But you become an observer of your own self on the field of service. You know, in the early days of the yagya, only one person was called Didi, Bari Didi. And that was Didi Manmohini. Nobody else. Everybody else was called Ben. Even Janki Ben, Gulzar Ben. This was very early days, right? You know. Later, of course, when they recognized the daddies to be older and older sisters, then the word daddy started to be used. But this word Didi was never used for anybody except Didi Manmohini. And then, of course, later, Dr. Nirmala adopted it for Australia so that they wouldn't call her Nirmala Nirmala. But the point being here is that now, if you listen, everyone's calling you Didi, left, right and center. And sometimes when I listen to somebody calling me Didi, it's because they want something. He was like, oh, Didi, you know, can we just... Ah, okay. I get it. Right, okay. So there's a... It's like the respect is a tag for something behind it. And, you know, some of the older brothers I work with, some of the senior brothers in Madhuban that I work with, they start calling me Didi. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. No, you know, this... doesn't quite feel right. And so I said, if you can just call me Gopi Ben, and they still call me Didi. But it's not that they want anything, and I realized after some time I just kind of let it go. But I just became an observer of that why would they call me that? And I realized, and it was in a meeting where one soul said, you have a lot of faith, and that faith brings us power. And I wasn't conscious of that in that moment. But I realized when people respect you for something, they're respecting you for a quality you're bringing to the table. The respect is attributed to that quality, but how is that quality activated in you? It's Baba, right? If I didn't have Baba and I didn't have Gyan, I wouldn't have a Trikaldarshi intellect. If I didn't have a Trikaldarshi intellect, I wouldn't have faith in the destination. So even if someone's praising you and calling you Didi and calling, it doesn't matter. You know where it's coming from. You know who's making you, who is recreating you. And I think that's such a beautiful journey to be on. So for me, it's less about the destination, wanting to get to the destination, because that's a longing. But knowing that each moment of Sangam Yoga is the destination. If I be, I step into that seat of being a detached observer with Baba. You know, sometimes in our Brahmin lives, we can feel like we're going through a washing machine experience. Right? Who's had that experience? Yeah, only a few people? Nobody else has had washing machine experience? No? Yeah, okay. All right, okay. So, when we're in that experience and you're starting to feel uncomfortable, discomfort inside, what do you do in that moment? Okay, so you start talking to yourself, I've got something to learn, I'm going through a process. Does that help you? Does it help you? You start coping. You go straight to your head. Some people will go straight to their heads. So they'll start talking to themselves. Baba says this, and Baba says that, Baba says that. You start coping. What else do you do when you feel uncomfortable? Can you go to Baba in that moment when you feel uncomfortable? You can write to him. Yeah, some people go straight to food. Let's just go have some Brahma Bhojan, right? You know, ever since, I'm sure, it must be the sadness of not having to meet Avyak Bhaktada in person. Picnics are exploding everywhere. You know, the only thing we have left is Brahma Bhojan now. But you know what happens when you're feeling uncomfortable? Is that for a few moments, it's really important at that moment to go and sit in front of Baba for a few minutes. And, you know, that discomfort is a limitation. It could be tiredness. It could be some form of anxiousness inside. Or it could be something that you can't even name. But it doesn't matter, whatever it is. But when you go and just sit in front of Baba, and you just start taking drishti from Baba, and then take yourself into this little room here with Baba. I'm just sitting with Baba and I'm going to observe what's happening right now. And you'll find in a few minutes, as you just take drishti from Baba and you'll start to feel Baba's presence with you and you just observe what's happening to you. We're not getting absorbed in it. We're not judging it. We're not rationalizing it. We are just observing it. And it's incredible how your power will start to come through and dissolve that limitation. Your power can only emerge when you detach. If you do not detach, you cannot experience being. You can't experience the intelligence of that deity coming out. That's why the most basic stage that Brahmins have to master is the detached observer. And it's that practice that starts to soften things inside. The moment you step into being an observer, even of your own karmic accounts, you're deactivating the judgment, the voice of judgment. You're deactivating the voice of excuses. And you're just watching. And something very beautiful starts to come out through your drishti. Oh, a bit of mercy. It's okay. A bit of love. As things start to soften inside. What's very important is you don't get yourself into a battle with yourself. Because the moment you can be feeling uncomfortable and then you start resisting feeling uncomfortable, and then guess what happens? It doubles. Right? So in that moment, it's really just taking drishti and knowing that there is a beautiful deity that has been invoked with love by both Babas, by Bab Dada. Yeah, Bab Dada is mummy and daddy. Brahma Baba, Shiv Baba. Yeah, they've given birth to us. So just step back and just observe and see what happens. Don't want something to happen. Let it happen. And then you find, you just very gently and gracefully just cross a limit. It could be anything, you know, like that happens to me sometimes when I'm physically tired. I've had like a number of long days and the body feels fatigued. It's one of the challenges. And then suddenly you get a phone call and you have to go to a program. Or you have to come here and give a lecture. Or you have to come here and give a class. And I just, in that moment, I just went to Baba's room. It's okay, Baba. You have to give your children something. Show me what you want to give. And I just take myself back inside, into that very comfortable armchair. I'm just sitting with Baba. And I'm just observing the feeling. It's not that I don't want the feeling to be there, no, let it just be. And slowly, 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 5-7 minutes, it just dissipates. And I come out renewed and refreshed. And this is how we gently cross the barrier of all of our limited nature and sanskars that become obstacles in our effort making. So it's using the power of your being in each moment. You know, letting that being work for you. That's really important, I feel. Now, I wrote a lot of notes, but there were two things. When I said, you know, for us to ultimately reach the state, the stage and the state of being complete, you have to build a capacity. You have to develop those sanskars. And Dharma has designed a beautiful plan for that. Wherever you're living, whoever you're serving with, they are the perfect formula for you to achieve your complete stage. It's the perfect practice ground for you. That is number one thing to accept. You know, sometimes people think, maybe because I have karmic accounts here and I have to settle them, but I can't have yoga because the karmic bond is too strong. Shall I just get up and leave and go somewhere else? Well, your karmic account is linked to your sanskar. So when you're getting up and going somewhere else, guess what? you're taking the sanskara with you. And it won't be long before that sanskara gets triggered somewhere else. Right? So leaving is never an option. It might be tempting. I mean, you need some space so the sanskara doesn't get triggered. But you have to find that space in that situation. Right? You can't just exit that situation and go somewhere where the grass is greener on the other side. Because it's never greener. Because you're taking all your rajopradan, tamopradan sanskars with you. So even if it's green there, it's going to get dirty pretty quick. So, you know, this thing of kind of staying put and creating space, and it kind of begs the question, what is transformation? Transformation is about cultivating really benevolent mental space. That's for me what transformation is. Is when you use each moment to create a benevolent mind space. You keep the mind space clean, fluid, soft, sweet, patient, understanding. That's transformation. And when we cultivate that space inside, and it's not a question, you know, some people think, oh, spiritual effort, I'm going to make effort for 1 month. And then what happens after that month? It's like going on a diet for 1 month. You lose 5 kilos, you come off the diet, and then you gain another 10 kilos. So it's more about when you start cultivating mind space, you're actually transforming your nature into spiritual effort. Your whole life is spiritual effort because it's looking after your mind. You don't just look after your mind for 1 month. You don't look after a baby for 1 month and then leave it. It is a consistent daily awareness and a daily attentiveness. And so it's almost like creating that approach to our spiritual effort. Yes, sometimes in between we need to put in 21 days of focused attention on something. Yeah, that's separate. But to create a nature of spiritual effort means to look after and cultivate your mind space powerfully. This is one of the first lessons I learned when, you know, two daddies were instrumental in teaching us how to meditate, Daddy Manohar and Daddy Chandramani. And the first thing they said to us was, the lesson that I remember very deeply is, if you want to become a yogi, you have to learn to look after your mind with love and with law. And the law is to handle it with love. And that's our greatest challenge, you know. Because a fully knowledgeable soul and a fully complete soul is a soul that is fully loving and yet totally detached. So one of the things that I noticed in Daddy was for her to cultivate this power of transformation, you know, this ability to keep my mind space fluid and soft and benevolent, she had two abilities. One was patience. Sometimes we would come to Daddy and say, Daddy, oh, you know what? I feel like I'm kind of, you know, reached a plateau in my efforts. Like I've reached a level and I'm not sure how to go to the next level. And Daddy's response to us was, wait and see. And we're like, how long? You know? So that level of patience with your own effort-making process, where you don't keep hammering your efforts, and then your patience with somebody else's effort-making process, right? They might not be as fast as you are. They might not think in the same way as you are, but can you have patience with them too? And then patience with an evolving situation. Can you imagine with Brahma Baba? Just think about Brahma Baba. Gyan wasn't fully clear for him. Right? It was, everything was being revealed, and yet Baba could be so carefree and say, yeah, when Shiv Baba tells us, we'll find out. It's okay not to know. It's okay not to understand everything. In fact, it's an act of wisdom sometimes to be a little bit ignorant in the right way. You know, I remember there was a sister, she used to be the president of the Brahma Kumaris in its country, in Greece actually. Her name is Hara. And Hara means cheerful in Greek. And one day I said to Hara, Hara, how do you, you're 82 years old, how do you stay so cheerful? You know, the Greeks are all about drama. Every small thing in it is a big drama. In fact, they have a city in the north of Greece called Drama. Yeah. And it's like, you kind of get lost in all these emotional reactions and these kind of expansive stories, and I'm like, it just kind of throws me into a spin. I'm like, okay, what's going on? And she says, you know what? I've learned something. She says, that is, many things come and they go. And so, situations will come. And before I've even had a chance to understand what's going on, it's gone. So I don't even bother trying to understand. If I have to understand, it'll come back to me. That's wisdom. Yeah, if something's meant for you, it will show up. If it's not meant for you, leave it. I mean, one of the biggest challenges we have in our Brahmin life is to understand ourselves. And yet we put that to one side to try and understand how the universe works. How this person works. Right? The next biggest challenge is to understand how God works. I mean, this is a full-time job, to understand how Baba works and how you work. You've got no time to think about anybody else. So patience, deep patience, to understand yourself and understand how Baba's working. Because it starts broadening. And the second ability I saw in Daddy was adjustment. If you want your mental space to stay fluid, you have to learn to adjust. You know, you think such a big daddy coming from India at a time when the service was growing. There was classes of 300. And then you come to Tennyson Road, you know, small little apartment the size of this stage, and no daily students, maybe only 10 students come at the weekends. And then you go shopping for the vegetables. You don't speak the language. And then you go on tour in Europe and they only give you boiled vegetables and steamed rice to eat. When you're used to a different diet. And yet Daddy never said anything. Whatever, accept, adjust. These two qualities, patience and the power to adjust, they make transformation easy. They really create fluidity where you can just, in a second, reset. And when you keep resetting to yourself again, you keep releasing power. You release the power of your purity, your virtue, your wisdom to do its work in a situation. And you know this, I know this Avyakt month is the topic from free from bondage to the Jivan Mukt stage, right? Now these two words sound pretty high and weighty. Bandhan Mukt, free from bondage. And the reality is we're not free from bondage. You've still got a body, right? Disease, crippled, doesn't work every so often. You've got karmic accounts. And then the Jivan Mukt stage, which is the stage of being liberated in life. So when you bring that down to, well, actually, what does it look like? What does it feel like as a stage? Baba described the Bandhan Mukt stage, the stage free from bondage, as a Yog Yukta stage. It is the stage where in every action you are accurately linked in yoga with Baba and performing that action. So you will not be bound by the consequence of that action. So it is a little bit like the lotus flower in the mud. You're in your 83rd body right now, with 83rd karmic accounts, with 83rd nature and sanskars. Right? But the moment Baba comes in your life and gives you knowledge and your third eye opens, you just, 84th birth. It's a subtle birth. And then Baba gives us an education for how to be an angel, a Brahmin and an angel. So, you know, when we're being yogyukt, we're remembering what Baba is telling us, how to do things in our life. Baba has given us a methodology for everything. And if we follow that method, we stay accurately linked to Baba, we can walk ourselves out of any bondage. In fact, the bondage isn't felt as a bondage. It's felt as a service ground, an opportunity to practice your divinity, what you've got from Baba. Nothing feels like a bondage anymore. So the Yog Yukt stage is very important in every action. And then the Jivan Mukta stage is actually the stage of the carefree emperor, where you are completely and fully free of all worries. Oh, isn't that a lovely stage? No worry. Means you can be a baby again. Right? It's amazing. Babies are amazing creatures. You know, have you ever known a baby to be born with a doubt? Oh, I'm so tiny. Who's going to look after me in this world today? Oh, I don't have a PhD. And yet, this little child is a master of the house. Can control. If a baby was to crawl in here, everybody would go, ooh. Right? It's amazing. And that's, the funny thing is, we grow up to become babies again. Yeah. So, carefree emperor. Now, you know, we are so used to carrying responsibility. One of the reasons, one of the things that I've explored for myself is this feeling of responsibility comes because either I've made a mistake and I feel guilty, that's why I'm carrying it, because I feel I need to correct it because of guilt. Or, I haven't used the right method in handling something. It's one of these two things. Otherwise, you wouldn't need to carry responsibility for anyone and anything because it's not real. You are not responsible for any human. And you are not responsible for anything in this world. Well, you are, but you're not, in the sense that you can't control it. You know, you're not responsible for the trees and this. No other entity except yourself. But the illusion of responsibility comes because we've made mistakes and because guilt kicks in. Or we're not using the right method in interaction or handling something. So we've developed a bank of mistakes over 63 births. Right? Sins, mistakes, put them in the same pot. So we keep carrying our mistakes and feeling guilty about it, and then we're responsible. And then God comes in our life and says, just give your burden to me. And we're like, that sounds really good, but I don't know how to do it. Right? Because it's a habit. Doubt is a habit. Carrying responsibility is a habit. It's just a habit. And one of the things that has helped me, and it was something I heard Avyakt Bhattada say, I was in and very lovingly given us a beautiful yukti to free ourselves from the burden of responsibility. And Baba used to say, when you wake up in the morning, just check the first thoughts you have. Because if anything you're carrying, it's usually revealed at that time of the day. And give those thoughts to Baba. And once you've given those to Baba from your heart, Baba, this is yours, then they might come back to you in the day, but remember that scene of giving it to Baba and keep giving it to Baba. So as the weak thoughts come up, don't carry it. You're not responsible for your weakness. When you carry your weakness, you feel responsibility. Right? So give up that thought to Baba. Look, Baba, look at the thought I'm having. Yeah, take it. You have a vicious thought, give it up to Baba. So creating a level of transparency in our mind with Baba, that nothing in my mind is hidden from Baba. Baba is visible, Baba's seeing everything that's going on, and I'm giving it to Baba. It doesn't feel right to go in front of Baba and hold a chickpea, right? When the ocean is standing in front of you. So if you keep putting everything in front of Baba, you will have to let go. Because there's no space for chickpeas. You know, I learned this lesson in front of Avyak Pap Dada one time. I'd been on a service program and there had been a little difference of opinion between me and another person. And I'd come to Madhuban and I decided that, you know, I needed to change. I felt really bad inside because it had affected the service. And I thought, I need some silence to really see what it is inside me that created this difference. Why couldn't I harmonize with this person? So I decided to take 5 days of silence. And I, you know, during those 5 days, Baba came. And of course, then, you know, had a chance to go on stage to meet Baba. And as I went in front of Baba, then Daddy just took my hand, and here's Baba sitting. Daddy's sitting here. She just pulled my hand before I could take drishti and made me sit down. And I'm like, oh, but I want to take drishti from Baba. And then, you know, I'm sitting here watching Baba, and he's giving drishti to everybody passing by, and I'm like, okay. I'm going to miss my drishti, you know. And I'm sitting there, and then eventually, you know, he kind of, last person comes, and he's doing this, and then he goes, oh, you know, it's like Baba just, oh, you're there. Such sweet drishti. And then, you know, Baba says, do you want to say anything? And Daddy's kind of going, yank me up, say something to Baba. And you know, this is what happens when you're holding on to a chickpea, right, in guilt. So I started saying, Baba, I'm so sorry. I think I made a mistake. I don't know what the mistake is, but I'm in silence to try and find out what my weakness is, but I'm really sorry if I've done any disservice in this service project. I didn't get on with this person. I'm really sorry, you know. And Baba's kind of looking at me like, what is this child going on about? You know, it's like, okay, fine. It was like I'm holding this little chickpea saying, Baba, look, I'm really sorry about this, you know. And he's like, okay. And then after I finish my rambling, Baba says, but you're already flying on the flying carpet of Baba's love. You just keep flying and make others fly. I was like, is that it? You know, sometimes when we hold on to something that's a mistake or a weakness, we're kind of expecting retribution and we're expecting correction and we're expecting, you know, because we've created that pattern. But that's not spiritual. And it was like, in that second, he's like, the feeling, what are you holding on to that chickpea for? You're already flying. Just keep flying and make others fly. Don't crash land anywhere. That was the sense I got. And I walked away thinking, Baba's vision is unlimited for every child. And yet we come in front of Baba with these little chickpeas. Yeah, they're just old patterns and habits. Every Brahmin, I mean, amazing, is a diamond, is a precious, precious diamond. Yeah. Okay. It's 12:08. I thought I'd only speak for half an hour, but I don't know where the time went. But I hope that's been useful in some way, shape or form. We have maybe 5 minutes for any questions. Anyone have any questions? No questions. No questions? Sorry? Mine is very much linked to two words, silence and purity. Everything that comes in front, merging, releasing, giving, everything happens in silence. And accomplishing a task with the power of silence. So, that's my focus at the moment.
I have a little question.
Yeah.
So, I came into Gyan, I'm like a COVID baby, 2020. And I feel sometimes that we have not taken sustenance from either any dadis or Avyak Bab Dada Milan. So do you have any insight for us? How do I talk to myself about it?
You know, being in the yajna is about study. It's about sustenance, and it's about attainment. That's the yajna. Study, we say, padhai, study, palna, sustenance, and prapti, attainment. That's what it means to be in the yajna. So, I have to look at these three things, not just one. What's my study like? That's the first. Palna is when I start to develop an attitude of learning, where I'm observing efforts, dharanas, and you can pick that up from anyone. You know, I have known souls who've lived with the dadis and haven't learned anything. So, palna doesn't mean you're physically close to somebody. But if you are making, based on your study, the subtlety of that effort, you will be on the same vibrational frequency as an elevated effort-making soul. You will catch what you need to catch. This is my personal experience. You will see, because you can only see something that you are working on inside yourself. And that's why study is the first basis. Study the aim, what am I becoming, what am I doing to make myself subtle, and then you'll start catching that from people and things around you. Right? And it just creates this beautiful sense of learning and absorbing, because it's based on your study. And that's what then brings you fruits. Yeah? And really, when you need help, Baba will send somebody to you. I've experienced that. You don't have to worry. You know, Chen was sharing experience. You know, how body's broken, doesn't work. And then, you know, the first time she came to Madhaban, and she came as a guest, and somebody did a meditation commentary for her. And then she went back, and her relative said to her, well, what did you learn? She said, meditation. So they said, do a commentary for us. So she repeated the same commentary she learned in Madhaban. And there was a doctor in that gathering, and he had a vision of Brahma Baba coming out of the wall. Yeah, like a vision of Brahma Baba and saying, this is my child, as in pointing to her. Saying, this is my child, look after her. And then she says to him, why doesn't he come to me? Why does he come to you? So Baba will find his way to you. I mean, he managed to find you after 2,500 years. You can trust God on that front. He's got your back. He knows exactly when to rescue you and how to rescue you. But my job is to sustain the quality of study and effort that Baba wants. And then everything else comes with it. Om Shanti.